home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're BaltimorePositive.com. Please come on out and check us out on the interwebs and subscribe and click here and do all the things I don't even know anything about. The Maryland Lottery gives me these Raven scratch-offs to give away. We've been arguing about the Raven front-facing bird logo. We'll be doing this throughout the holidays. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is coming near you. We're going to be at Greenmount Station this week. And then for the holidays, we're going to be at Coco's on the 4th and having eggnog, and it'll be spiked. And then on the 5th, we're going to be over at the BMA doing art and crab cakes, as well as a theater with Dan Roderick, who is a writer in residence at the Baltimore Sun for 45 years and doing his play. All of it brought to you by our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare, as well as our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Making a big announcement here in this segment, but you'll be hearing it throughout the week. This will be the only fresh one I do this week that is music oriented. It came to my attention that November 22nd is International Music Day. I looked this up, and it's not some Hallmark holiday thing. This thing goes back to like the 18th century. This thing goes back to like, real music, Bach, and the stuff that Billy Joel listens to these days. And I just wanted to like freshen up some music stuff, but I've interviewed so many Rock and Roll Hall of Famers in modern times, including Gina Shock, who's going to be joining us, Dan Acosta on the 18th. We'll be Dan at Dundalk talking about the Go-Go's reunion next year because Belinda's put the band back together. That's pretty good. Gina's gonna, if she hears that, she's gonna poop. So I'm doing a whole rock and roll thing. If you listen this week with the Ravens in LA playing the Monday night game, I've just gotten into a music state of mind. It's what makes me happy. Doing things like at the end of the year, I get all wistful now that I'm 56. The best part of the year for me, certainly not for any Ravens fan, would not be, losing to the Chiefs either time. But sports, not really. It's what concert did you see this year? Where did you go? What did you see? And I sort of chased Sammy Hagar around, knowing that it was going to be good because the internet allows you to see rehearsals. And I'm like, he's going to play 5150? What? With Satriani? What? I drove with a bad back to Cleveland to go to Blossom to see it for the third time and hang out with Thomas Dolby. And there's only one Van Halen guy that it comes into this honest. He wrote a book about the Dave era, and lots of folks love Dave. And the book sells nice, and then Alex is writing a book. Sammy just was out on the internet. Michael Anthony just appears really happy to be singing a few songs on stage and enjoying his life and golfing and doing whatever he's doing. Greg Renoff is enjoying his life as now a writer in residence in the universe. He's the writer of writings. I call him the good professor. I think he's Jersey born and bred. He's got some ticket stubs lying around from the Brendan Byrne Arena back in the day. And it allows me to bring out my Van Halen belt buckles. And, I'll let everybody tell you. You can tell the story of what you do and who you are. And but you're the Van Halen author in my world. But you took a really interesting take on Van Halen because it was almost a little bit of a prequel to their success in a lot of ways. And I love your history and I love seeing your postings. And I'm like, once or twice a year, I get to have Renoff on. And, a year when I'm chasing Sammy around, chasing 1986, 1987 in my childhood, and Alex writes this book, I thought it'd be great to have you on. So, how are you, my rock and roll friend?
I am well. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. Always a pleasure. Will tell you that I spent a lot of time listening to Sammy Hagar era Van Halen at a dorm at the University of Maryland College Park, an 8-story all-male dorm cranking OU812 and other Van Halen albums. So I come by honestly. What are you
Hello,
looking?
baby.
With
Yeah,
this part of the country.
and then everybody in the dorm knew hell's about to break loose, straight on through because you're not turning, best of both worlds. You don't say turn that one off, skip through that, like it was. Are you? I mean, I'll start the party for anybody that hadn't been here. Greg and I have done a couple of chats. You can go read them about his book, and we'll weave through this because we weave the tale because it really is amazing that it isn't over in a lot of ways, right? Like Ed has passed away, Wolfgang's out doing his thing, and I'd love to get Wolfie, if you're listening, come on the show. I haven't invited you, but I just did. But like I sort of can't get enough of it. And it was so good this summer. Sammy was just so, I was there the first night in West Palm. And, you know, I've drank wine with Sammy in a vault alone. We have mutual friends. I didn't bother. I bought a ticket with my buddy John, who's a guitarist. You know, we went, and then I saw it with my. I took my wife, and I bought her a seat in the fifth row. So I said, "You just need to be really close to this, like, you know, like." And then I went out to Cleveland with my buddy Bernard. I had a night alone, just me and some Mexican food and some margaritas in the parking lot. I had never been to Blossom, and they were the three best nights of my summer. And like, and I guess that's why I would buy your book, right? I mean, to pimp your book and what you do, but it's like seeing friends gather. The night down at Jiffy Lube Live, it, you know, I just saw so many friends, and it really does. It's nostalgic, but it's still really good, dude.
That's kind of the through line for me with Van Halen. I did write a book about Van Halen's beginnings called Van Halen Rising, which traces their rise out of Pasadena to the worldwide stage. But you talked about the feeling you had this summer seeing Sammy at Blossom and at West Palm Beach. And it's a reminder that that's kind of the through line, is the good time vibe that has really been. That's really been the, there is obviously been a lot of negativity surrounded with breakups and these types of things. But for me, that was what always was the party atmosphere. That was what always got me interested in listening to more Van Halen and kept me listening to Van Halen all the way through. I mean, that was what made us crank up Van Halen albums in the dorm and party before we went to lacrosse games and party before we went to football games and living in College Park. I mean, so that's always been the thing that has been consistent for me. Whatever album I'm listening to, I hear that just that positivity. I mean, there really is from the music. Again, the politics inside the band between the members sometimes is not always pretty, but I think the music is a different story.
Well, as I've said, there's a third act going on with the offspring of Ed and Valerie, but there's also the first. They're really two different bands and offshoot bands. And when you go see Hagar do this Best of All Worlds thing, and there's going to be a part two of that next summer, and I guess they're going to come back and play a couple of the songs they couldn't play. I should have gone to Japan, even though I've seen the videos. I mean, like, of all, and I love, love, love Japan. So, like, had I thought more about it, I probably, and had I known he was going to drop some new tracks over there, When It's Love and some other stuff. And I'm not the guy that went to the island with Sammy, and I'm not necessarily a Mos Tequila guy or really in. I don't consider myself a Red Rocker in that way. Although I love you, Sammy, you know I love you. But this is my favorite era, and for him to bring it back, I think he's been a little shocked at how the fan. But there is no more. They did the Dave thing, right? Dave got back. There's that era. That's all available on YouTube with the short hair. And some of that was really good. And we can go through that. But you talk about your book and the beginnings of the feeling of they were sort of a backyard California party band. And for a kid from Baltimore or a kid in Jersey, I don't know that we had backyard bands, but my buddy John Allen and Nikki K and my guys at Child's Play, maybe they disagree. We had more clubs than backyard bands or whatever, but the California vibe that you portray in your book and the roots of where it came from, surf culture, the beach, the strip, Hollywood, television, all of that baked into this band, right? And starting with Roth, which was really the showmanship, is what drew you to the band. Beside the guitar playing, because it could have been Yngwie Malmsteen too, you know, what could have been a different band?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the California culture. I mean, that was one of the things that I really wanted to try to bring out in the book. When I wrote about it, was to understand that different bands come out of different scenes and different vibes get transmitted through basically the culture of the surroundings. And that definitely was something to all of those pieces that you've sort of tweaked, that you teased out, the Hollywood part, the surf part, right? That kind of came to be part and parcel of what Van Halen is. I think about what Ted Templeman talked about when I worked with him on his autobiography, was that he heard in the Van Halen background vocals a little bit of a Beach Boys thing. Now, it wasn't that Van Halen was trying to cop the Beach Boys, but he said, "I hear this sunshine, this harmony, this Southern California positivity coming through here, but I also hear this dark heavy metal, maybe this sort of like this heavier thing that comes out of another
You
part
had
of
me
Los
going yacht
Angeles."
rock there for a minute, right? Yeah.
100%. Well, I mean,
Well,
Ted
it's
Templeman is
Toto,
the
right? You know, I mean, those kinds of bands, it, you know, it
Right.
was all in that. And I know
Right.
that Yacht Rock thing, we're gonna love that in a couple of weeks. It's coming out on HBO, but
That,
it's baked into that. That's Hotel California, The Script,
yeah.
Linda Ronstadt, all of that. Joe
And
Walsh, right?
yeah, and I think definitely, and I think that's what the, you know, the if you don't have an understanding of Pasadena and what the suburbs were like, and that's why backyard parties were a thing, is because you had these large houses on big estate, you know, state type land. You could put 500 to 1,000 kids in a backyard. You could pack them in. You probably can't do that
I
in
thought that
some
only
neighborhood.
happened in teenage sex comedies in the 80s. That was a
Well,
real thing.
I mean, that was one of the, you know, that was one of the pitches for me for the book to people. I was like, you've seen the movie Dazed and Confused. I mean, this is like Dazed and Confused in Pasadena. It really was. It was the era of muscle cars. It was the era of 74, 75, all that great music that came out of that period of time. ZZ Top, Alice Cooper, Van Halen was playing all those covers, and they were doing that music to build a fan base. And I think, you know, for me, understanding the origins of Van Halen and then taking it up through the up to present, I mean, that's the thing, is that with Sammy and Mike, you know, they are carrying on the era that, you know, I kind of, when I came of age as Van Halen, I started with 1984, but really, as I've told people many times, you know, the Sammy Hagar era was my main era of Van Halen fanhood, because that was from 85 to 95, 96 when they broke up. That was my, you know, kind of my prime years as a teenager loving Van Halen. And Sammy's waving that flag. And I think credit to him is that he did see the response and is doubling down on it to say they're going to go, sound like they're going to go out again next summer. That seems to be the plan. And they're recording new music, it seems like. It's, you know, there is going to be no more quote unquote Van Halen, as we've talked about, you and I have talked about in the past. I mean, Ed is gone. And I think Alex is right when he says, but there's no Ed, you can't have a Van Halen. And Wolfgang says the same thing, but you can still celebrate the music and play the songs, right? And that's what they're doing. I don't think anybody is going to see Sammy Hagar and Mike and saying, oh, this is just like seeing Van Halen. It's just more, this is the spirit of Van Halen living on through these great songs with these two guys who were in Van Halen for a very, very, very long time, obviously.
Well, I mean, we're all trying to have credibility and authenticity in everything we do, right? Like, I mean, literally, that's a hallmark of what I try to do. And to bring Satriani in on it at this point, and I went to the West Palm show hot as I have never. I do hot yoga. I mean, I'm a dude in that way, and I sweat more that night. I mean, I just was going through. It was so hot, and we were going to get tickets down in the pit. It was a little pricey, whatever. And I'm like, we're going to swelter. I'm not going to spend all that. So we got seats in the back. I didn't spend a lot of money. At the end, it was okay. Sat in the back of the pavilion, but I was with a real guitar player and a guy who knows stuff and loves the band and has tried to emulate do all that stuff, right? The Eruption stuff. And a song and two into it, he's like, man, Satriani's like got his tone, like it's channeling in some way. It was truly, and the way he played it was a celebration, like do you say, and like it was on. It was on in a way that like you could never have envisioned. I couldn't have envisioned sitting with Sammy Hagar when I first interviewed him or sat with him in 1994 backstage, said, you're going to be 76 and doing and running around singing Run Around and on a stage, and Mike's going to be hitting harmonies, and there's going to be things that help you sound better, but you're going to be doing this, dude. You're not Mariah Carey's Christmas lip sync celebrate this. You're going to go out and earn your money, and fans are not going to want something half-assed. This isn't Willie Mays playing for the Mets. No offense, you know what I mean? This isn't where LeBron is now. It's where he has to be. And I tell you, man, I just the fact that I saw it once and saw it three times and got in my car and drove to Ohio to see it. And the only reason I went to Ohio is because we didn't go to New Jersey. I was going to go to the Jersey show on the Saturday night and I regretted it. And I woke up Sunday morning. I said to my wife, I'm driving to Cleveland today. She's like, you're what? And I'm like, I'm going to drive to Cleveland. I'm just going to have an experience. So I went. It was the highlight of my year. And it's made this music thing this week for what I'm trying to do on the air. And I think guys like you that write books that not to say keep the legend alive, but feed a guy like me that had Van Halen one on a thing and said, where did all this come from? Because I shook my ass, I had a good time, and I remember the girls and the drives to Ocean City and the cassettes or whatever it is. But there's a really rich tapestry that goes into all of this as we get older to say, man, they're alive and still making this happen, and we miss Ed. And I think the reason I reached to you was it was the 5-year anniversary maybe of Ed's departure, and it showed up all over my timeline because of me and you and my rock and roll almost famousness, all the rock and roll stuff I've done. And I thought I'm going to reach to you. I mean, all these years later, I mean, if you do you find more information about their youth that you could have, would have put into a book had you known? Because I would think you're the dude people like me come to when we're like, tell me more about Van Halen, Greg Renoff.
Yeah, I mean, there's always more things that kind of come to light. That's why I enjoyed Alex's book, which came out, what, about a month ago,
I
came out.
haven't read it, so I want to get a little primer, but
I know,
please,
no, yeah, no
yeah.
spoilers. I won't give any spoilers. People should dive into it. To me, the best parts of the book and the parts I enjoyed the most was the parts where Alex was talking about his parents, his father particularly, and his relationship with his parents and his brother, basically the nuclear family unit and how that operated. And really, that's the kind of the inside, to pun a song from 5150, the inside there that I think that you couldn't get into without having Ed or Al talk about it in that sort of way. And really, particularly, I thought it was remarkable to hear from Alex talking about how his father was an influence of his father, who was flawed in some ways, but was always a musical influence and sort of a person who taught the brothers about the meaning of what it meant to be able to play music for people and what that meant to be a career. And I thought that was actually my favorite parts of the book. And that's the stuff to me, learning as a guy who wrote a book about Van Halen, wrote the book with Ted Templeman, that's stuff that really nobody had gotten inside, because unless there was just a passing quote here and there for an interview talking about their parents, no one had really ever talked at length about it. And that was super, super interesting and one of the real gems of the book. And again, no spoilers for you. I want you to enjoy the book. It's a good read.
You know, I can get all James Lipton on you because I've been Jack Torrance. I've had to go off and write books and be left alone for 100 days and not talk to anybody and not shave and probably smell like Steve Jobs, before it's all over with. And you're doing this professionally. Greg Renoff's our guest. He's a Van Halen biographer, historian, and the Sammy Hagar thing this summer and the Alex Van Halen book and the 5-year passing of Eddie. And I've interviewed all of the band members at one point or another, or have been in the room with them. Alex famously on the 5150 tour. I've unearthed some of that stuff. I'm going to put it on the air along with every Bon Jovi and every other thing. In my modern, I had Rick Emmett on this year. I've had Lawrence Gowan from Styx on this year. Also, Stephen Page from Bare Naked Ladies. The great, great Todd Rundgren spent an hour with me last month. So some rock and roll stuff, but when I bring guys like you on about this, and maybe one day I'll chase Sammy down or Michael and they'll come in and tell me all of this, but I don't want to write a book on them. I want to read a book on them and I want to ask questions or have them on my show or have people like you that have wise information to promote Wise Markets, one of our sponsors. But when you read Alex's book, and I'm not trying to get you to spoil any of it, I'm trying to get into your head as the author of if you had access to them, or would have been able to ask them more things that would have enriched your book, which is your book is basically everything that happened before they hit it big in Van Halen one, right? So that's all of that. You're trying to get into the headspace, and I would ask you how much biographical information was even made available. And I would only bring a little sports into this because my buddy John Miller, not the broadcaster, but the author, Wall Street Journal author, had just did a big biography on Earl Weaver, and he told me how hard it was to get anybody to find old school stuff because Earl never talked about it. And I don't know how much Ed and Alex ever talked out loud in sobriety in any way, in some Rolling Stone interview or any of that, that tipped you off to information that helped you with the book, and how much Alex, and how much still will remain some sort of mystery, even the Valerie and Wolfgang in the end, right?
Well, the one good piece of info, well, the good what the good news for me was that, of course, Alex and Ed did a lot of interviews over the years. I mean, that's just a matter of just being, if you're in the biz and you're trying to promote a record, you're going to do interviews. And in particularly the early years, meaning 78, 79, when the band was first starting, you ended up getting a lot of people who had not interviewed you before. You're also trying to introduce yourself as an artist to a rock audience out there rather than being a band with a sixth or seventh album. So there's a lot of tell us your story. And a lot of that got repetitive. But one of the benefits for me of being a fan who wrote a book about Van Halen was that I had been reading this stuff since I was a kid. I mean, going back to Circus Magazine and then years on sort of collecting, weekly readers out of New Jersey, like the East Coast Rocker or the Aquarian, that would be these sort of these things that oftentimes got thrown away, but the bands would do interviews in. I had collected a lot of the stuff. I had boxes and boxes of the stuff. And so I had quite a bit of information, but that was my point about information on the brothers. But that was my point about Alex and the stuff about his family. I mean, no one's really going to say, tell us about your dad. Like, no one, in a radio interview, but they might say, how did you guys get your start? Where did you play? What record labels were looking at you? You would get that type of information and get feedback from the band members in conversations that were either printed or recorded radio interviews or TV interviews, but
Hey, I
really
was
to
one of the
kind of
guys
just drill
doing that
down.
stuff,
Yeah.
right? So
Yeah.
there
Right.
was global information, and then there
Right.
was the time Debbie Harry told me that Ted Bundy kidnapped her.
Yeah. That's the stuff that sort of pops up. Right.
And then
Right.
that story's still out there 40 years later.
Wow. Wow.
I
Yeah.
mean, like, yeah, you just never know, right?
So I had, so to put a fine point on it, I had quite a bit of information from interviews of the brothers speaking at length about their experiences. But yes, to have this sort of profile from a perspective from Alex and this profile of his family is absolutely invaluable. Really, it's wonderful.
Greg Renoff is a great biographer of all things Van Effin Halen, and they've been on my mind. So you've been on my mind. Tell everybody what you do and your authorship and how to get your book and like all that stuff. Because if I've titillated anybody here to sit and look at me wearing an I'm a Blunt Person shirt and hold up my Van Halen belt buckles, this is my favorite one, by the way. The this is the flying V. This is more Van Halen 2, and this is more Van
Van
Halen
Halen
1.
too.
Yeah, and then I have the silver one, which is really kind of a weirdly rare one. So, so I'm an old school classic rock guy. I guess I know enough to write a really bad book about something, right? You know, I mean, in that way. But I don't prefer that. I prefer to be a fan, and if I can get the living members on to talk about not just the old times, but talk
Sure.
about it as a 70-year-old and what it all means all
Sure.
these years later. Where are you when you? Because you're like not a professor anymore. I still call you the professor.
Yeah, so I've taken on full-time writing, and the last book I did was the Ted Templeman book, which came out a few years ago, and that was really that one transitioned out of the Van Halen book. I did the Van Halen book, and I got to interview their record producer Ted Templeman, who had did the first six records with them, and then also worked on For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge with Andy Johns, co-producing that record as well. And so I got to know Ted through doing the Van Halen book, and at the end of that process of doing the Van Halen book, I approached him about doing a biography. And as we were joking about Yacht Rock, Ted has had a very long and illustrious career and did quite a bit of work with the Doobie Brothers and with Little Feat and Nicolette Larson. So he was sort of an architect of Yacht Rock. And I
He was a
remember
Grammy
asking it,
award-winning artist, was he
100%,
not?
100%.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. Yeah. So I talked to him and I said, what do you think about trying to do a book? And he was like, oh, no one's going to want to read a book about me. And I'm like, I'm not sure about that. So I had to sort of sell him on the idea and sort of gave him a little bit of, a perspective on that. There's an interesting story here. You were an artist, as I mentioned. Ted was a member of a band called Harper's Bazaar, which was a soft rock band like The Association or The Fifth Dimension that was very popular in the late 60s. And then he transitioned to becoming an executive for Warner Brothers eventually. He started out at the very bottom at Warner Brothers as a tape listener, discovered the Doobie Brothers, discovers air quotes Van Halen, discovers Nicolette Larson again, air quotes, and so had this really great run as an artist and as a producer and as an executive, rising to the very top at Warner Brothers. And so that was the other book I did, which was, another way for me to kind of explore what I'm interested in about music, which is creativity. I love the band origin stories, as that's clear from the Van Halen book. But I really, really enjoyed working with Ted because we got to talk about how records were built and really understand, especially in the 70s and the 80s into the 90s, how important, working together in a recording studio and having the infrastructure in place of having an engineer. Van Halen had a great engineer, Don Landy, who did the first six records with Ted. You have a great producer, Ted Templeman, but you also have a record label that's, loaning you money, which is going to be spent by the band and promoting the band, and that whole dynamic between selling records and working with the label to sort of get your, get recompensated for your work. While those deals aren't always fair. So that whole constellation of things that were involved with being a record executive and being an artist and being a producer for Ted made that book a great fit for me.
Well, I knew Ed Leffler a little bit, through the years. So I've never, it would be an honor to have Ted Templeman on my show talking about your book or anything ever written or anything he would want to talk about to promote or even a charity, because I like those kinds of, I mean, like you, I just seek to talk to Todd Rundgren for 40 minutes and learn how he wound up in Hawaii and how he's brilliant and what he's doing with art. And, so at this point in my life, they're fascinating people. And to your point, it's what was it really like to do this, especially a guy like him who went under radar, because he could get on planes and people wouldn't know who he is.
Correct, correct. And I think that's the thing that's like interesting about Todd too. Like Todd was such a huge rock icon, and yet here's a guy who not only did Meatloaf but also did Grand Funk. I mean, talk about a guy who's diverse. XTC, right? I mean, he's this is a guy who was again, I think for me as a person who was real passionate about rock music, the whole sort of rise and fall of the rock producers. I mean, fall meaning that records are made today a lot of times in people's basements, or they make them in their garages with laptops. It's not the same. Because there's not the same money involved in terms of the record labels and what's
By the way,
possible
that's like
anymore. But
word for word exactly the way Todd Rundgren explained why he was in York, Pennsylvania playing at the Appel Center. He literally said those exact words.
I
Literally.
mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating, right, to think about the how things have kind of come full circle. But someone like, Todd, their ears, that's the thing is, and I'm not sure the system was necessarily better in all sorts of ways, but there were guys who had great ears for songs. That's a Ted Templeman. That's a Todd Rundgren. That's a people who could hear something in a song idea and go, keep working on that. That's what Ted would talk about. And, I got to talk to Pat Simmons and some of the other guys at Doobie Brothers about this, how Ted could hear the beginnings of Blackwater and go, there's something to that. That's an interesting song. Keep working on that. Or, What a Fool Believes, telling Michael McDonald, like, this is a good idea, even though Michael McDonald kept telling Ted, oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. And Ted was like, keep going, keep working, it's going to work. And so, that's the type of thing that Todd could do too, that you hear the potential for a piece of music where other people might go, ah, that's not any good, or just maybe listen to the artist, and say that's bad, or vice versa, tell the artist the honest truth, going, this isn't good enough, this isn't good enough, and have that sort of that cred, right, as someone like a Ted Templeman or a Todd Rundgren or any number of the other great producers that were out there, who made their bones by being able to say, yeah, I've sold millions of records.
I have this little thing called inspiration and perspiration as a category at Baltimore Positive, and it's just more stories of people that sort of pick up the passion and do something. And for me, from the first time I ever held a Kiss record over at my cousin Nelson's up in his attic, and I told Alice Cooper this when I met him, because that's the first time I heard an Alice Cooper song. I got Kiss Alive One, probably it changed my life, right? Like, so in some sort of way. And I saw D period Child, and I saw A Coin, AUCOIN, these names. And later in life, I collect these belt buckles, and they all say A Coin on the back, because he was the guy who bought them and made them glittery and made them Kiss. And then I interviewed Desmond Child, who's this really mild-mannered, quiet, shy, almost introverted fellow who did a half an hour. Just a beautiful man. And when we ended, he said, "How did I do? Was it okay?" And I'm like, "You're Desmond effing Child. You wrote 'Love and Use a Dirty Job,' and I'm the man to do it." And it is an amazing thing. And I'll make you laugh with this, and we'll go back talk some more Van Halen. But Kiss is an interesting thing, because I'd like to chase Paul Stanley out, because he's been very magnanimous through his life with me. But I remember when I was a little boy and I got Kiss fever, and I wanted to join Kiss Army and the Kiss fan club and the Kiss jacket and the belt buckles and all that. My dad, who starved as a kid in 1929, born in 1919, depression, worked in the war in Martin Marietta. It's all in my documentary. But like he said to me when I'm 10 years old and he's in his 50s, he's like, "Kiss doesn't care about you. Kiss doesn't," like, so he says this to me. And as Paul Stanley has me in his suite at the Dulles Hyatt on, you know what I mean? Like literally on the Creatures tour, whatever the hell tour it was, at the Patriot Center. And he's buying me drinks and offering me chicken dinner. I think I even said this to him. I'm saying, "My dad said you would never do anything for me." So, God gave rock and roll to you. You know what I mean? Greg Renoff
Absolutely.
is here. We believe in rock and roll, or as Bruce Springsteen would say, the power of rock and roll. And I think all of these years later, Part of the reason I'm doing Music Week and having you on my show is like, I can't take one more pissed off caller or one more racist caller about quarterbacks or coaches or fire the guy. Like, I've done all of that, right? And I can talk about sports, but like, there's something about music that's really communal at this point, that is cathartic at this point in these troubled times. That I hope Sammy puts the band together and the weather's perfect. That's all I hope, you know?
It's going to be, I mean, I'm really, really happy they're going to do another run. I will tell you that when I saw Sammy and Mike in Arkansas, the thing was the show was long, relatively speaking, and you still felt like there was so much more meat on the bone. He did a couple of Montrose songs, but he didn't do Rock Candy, as I recall. And of course, that's sort of to me, one of the iconic Montrose songs. And just thinking, oh, there's like so much more stuff. And I know he talked about the struggles of building the set list, of trying to do stuff from his solo career and doing the Montrose stuff, and then also doing the Van Halen stuff. But great, just a great, great, great band. That night, interestingly enough, that was the night before Jason Bonham left the tour. Jason's mom had taken ill, and Sammy sort of said that sort of under his breath as he was giving him a hug on stage. You could see Jason was kind of tearing up, saying, you know, he's got a real situation back home with his mom, but he stayed here with us, and it was very moving and very powerful to see that. You could see sort of Jason's love for Sammy, and that was a, you know, there's those moments that you can only see live on a stage like that, and the songs just sort of all make it so great. It was just a wonderful, and it was, like you said, it was hot in Arkansas. It was, you know, and I'm thinking Sammy's up there, and he's 77 years old, and it's like, you know, he's pouring sweat, and
I'm
he's running
pulling
around the
for Sammy
stage.
every night. Like, I'm
100%,
pulling for him. You know
100%.
what
He's man is working for his
I
money. We all know he's richer. We all know he's richer than God, but he's working for his money. He really is. I mean, he's, you know, he really is. So
Well, it's inspiring. It's
it
inspiring.
is.
That's where we're seeing Springsteen right now. I'm watching him run through Western Canada. I should have gone because it's good again. You know what I mean? Like, he's mixing the sets up a little bit. And I think the thing with Sammy is he was even before saying, I'm losing words here, and I don't re you know, remember. Like, it, and watching him put the effort in, it is like watching a 40-year-old basketball player go out and do it. And I love that part of it. And I love that it brings me to people like you to help you sell your books and our passion. And I'm going to say this to you, and I'm going to tell Julio Bermejo, and I don't care where he's going. Sammy's birthday is October 13th. My birthday is October 14th. I've never been to Cabo because every time I go to Mexico, sorry, Julio, I get sick. And I don't like being sick for like a month. And I don't like being sick, especially as I get older. So I have never gone down to Cabo for the thing, right? And then he's doing this Vegas thing now, which I'm a dumbass for not going, especially if I didn't go to Tokyo, because there's nothing I enjoy more, right? Like, it's the best couple of hours of the year for me, right? And like, I love Bryan Adams, and I love Styx, and I love bands, and I have friends in bands, and a lot, and I even like mediocre concerts, quite frankly, and little concerts, and it doesn't have to be a big stadium thing for me or an international superstar to get me excited about it at all when it involves music. But it was a great couple of hours that I'm starting to think, like, next year, the birthday thing in Vegas, based on two different set lists. Kenny Aronoff's gonna play some songs. Rick Springfield's gonna, who knows who's gonna show up, because everybody kind of likes Sammy. You know what I mean? Like, coming in. We have no idea how long any of us are gonna live. I'm feeling like I'm gonna have to at least circle that. And my buddy Julio get me into Cabo. If I ever put my ish together and like really had to figure it out, I would figure out a way to get in, whether I'd want to or not. I don't know. I used to have this excuse, like a football press pass in football season, and a baseball team might be making the World Series again because we're decent, and it's October 14th. But I want to go to Vegas based on what I saw, and meet me in Vegas. That's my only offer. Drinks are on me for as long as you're there. I don't know how much you drink, or if you drink, if it's iced tea, that's fine too. Arnold Palmer's. But you know, the communal part of doing this with fans is part of what, dude, he's 77, right? I mean, you know what I
Oh, and
mean?
you're going to get
Right?
it. And really, I mean, look, I had a great time in Arkansas. I know you had a great time in Cleveland. You know, it's fun to be outdoors in those venues. It really is. I mean, they call them the sheds, and they sort of get a bad rap. And like, again, it's not the garden, but on the other hand, there is something fun about being outside in the with the moon shining down and that whole aura around. But you're going to get a better show. I mean, honestly, think about how any of us feel traveling as we get older, like going from place to place, and then you have to go outside and stand in the humidity and sing. You're going to get a better show indoors Just those guys are going to be able to feel better, get better rest, and you're just going to probably get, maybe you'll get a longer set list. It makes sense. I mean, it just makes sense. Especially, look, as I said, last summer, all those outdoor shows in that heat, that's a killer. I mean, it's an absolute killer. It's a killer for anybody.
Well, and after
Not to
COVID, I
mention.
mean, I can't begin to tell you, since maybe since the last time we got together. I know, when did your book come out on Van Halen? I want to promote that for you and make sure we sell
It
that.
came out in 2015.
15. I think I found you in about 19. It was before the plague. And then, I went out during the plague, and I flew to Oakland, and Pearl Jam didn't have a drummer, and they brought this kid in from Marin County who, Eddie's daughter loved the band, and he came in and they just played greatest hits. I saw John Mayer at Madison Square Garden. He came out on a stool in the middle of the Sob Rock tour, and he's like, everybody in the band's got COVID, can't play the songs, so I'm going to play what I play. Questlove showed up at 10 o'clock in a cab and got on. Like, I saw COVID stuff. I mean, I saw Styx without JY one night, when his wife passed, and I saw sort of really weirdly, awkwardly bands missing people for different reasons during all of this. And Springsteen, I saw Springsteen in Austin without Nils Lofgren. You know what I mean? The conductor of the band didn't play, my friend. But show goes on as much as it can. I'm with you, dude. Like, do whatever you need. Do a residency. I'm good with that. Just don't charge me $800, dude. Come on. Play a place big enough that I can get in. You know what I mean? Come on, Sammy. That's
Yeah, I
all.
mean, I think that I always believe that Samuel put the interests of the fans at the top of his list. And so who knows what the prices will be, but he's never struck me as the type of guy who has to do the cash grab. I think, because he's already got the cash. He's already got the cash, so it's okay. It's like, that's a great thing when you have a guy who's like, who's that successful in so many different venues. I remember there was a great quote from Sammy or something. He says, I lose $750,000 every dollars every time I make an album or something. He said that's, but that's okay. I need the tax write-off anyway, which is probably true.
He just sold one of his cars for like $1 billion, didn't he?
Exactly. It's like, right. It's like, yeah, it's all good, right? As far as he's concerned, he's built his empire, so to speak, where his other operations fund his music, and look, the lights were great. There was a great screen. Sound was great. Everything was 100% top shelf when you saw. There was never, you never got a sense that it was like, oh, this is, corners are being cut here or whatnot. It was great. I mean, it was really a great show. And everyone gets to shine too. That's the great thing about Sammy. He knows how to put the spotlight on other people, puts a spotlight on Mike. We should talk about Mike. Mike sang a couple of like sang one song. I think what did he which song did he sing? Oh, he ain't talking about love. He sang, I'm sure he sang the same thing for you. And it was great. And that was an acknowledgement there of Ed, where he pointed to the sky and said, this one's for you, Ed. And that was special. And he just really knows how to, I think, show his appreciation for the guys who play with him. And that was the real feeling too, that you got, that those guys generally all like being up there together, and there's not a sort of, oh, I have to do this to sort of pay the bills. Not at all. Not anything like that.
That's why the Vegas thing to me felt like, I felt like, well, if there's ever a thing to go to where you're gonna have a good time and it's gonna be a good little thing, and that's why, hey Sam, if you're listening, man, I figure it out. We'll all figure out a way to go see it, because it is so much fun. Last thing last for you, or first thing first, David Lee Roth and his place in life at this point, which. He's always been an offbeat, iconoclastic, eccentric, unique folk. I mean, he's a different kind of cat, right? And I would say for him, he's lived an amazing life, right? In that way. And he's not out doing this, shaking his butt and doing that. He was off making art last I saw him, right?
Yeah, he's done a few shows with Steve Stevens. Like, God, the name of that group, the act, escapes me, but Steve has a little side project where he'll do play corporate gigs, and Dave came out and did a couple of those shows with them. But yeah, I mean, I think we don't see or hear very much of Dave. Dave puts up videos, and it's always interesting because you're not quite sure sometimes how old they are. Some of them are clearly date back to the 90s. Some of the stuff he puts out on his YouTube channel, some of it seems more recent. But yeah, interesting too, because when you get into Alice's book, there's a lot of Dave talk. Some positive, some negative. I think mostly, I'll just say without spoiling, a mostly positive take from Alex on his relationship with Dave, and the clearly a lot of appreciation and also respect for what Dave brought to Van Halen, which was cool to read. But yeah, the thing I keep hoping as an author, I keep hoping that Dave will pick up pick up his pen and start write another book, sit down and write another book. His biography came out in, I want to say, like 1997 or 1996. The Crazy from the Heat bio, which is out of print, which is also insane to me that the book is out of print. Or Dave, do an audiobook. The book never came out as an audiobook. Read your book from the, you know, from 25, 30 years ago. It's a great read. And I think a lot of people, you know, a whole new generation of people have read the book. And it's because you can buy it on eBay, but it's not, my point is it's not being currently published or printed, right? So it seems to be something that could be unearthed, expanded edition. I would love to see Dave sort of, you know, kind of give his final say on Van Halen, sort of his, you know, final thoughts. Maybe this would be his last book, you know, kind of get that down on paper because the book was super entertaining. It's definitely not your traditional narrative, so to speak. It jumps around from thing to thing. You're basically reading about one thing and then, you know, 10 years earlier I did this and then 15 years later I climbed Mount Everest or whatever Dave says. So it's a unusual journey through his mind, but it's a very unique book and I would love to see him do another one.
You can't get enough, can you?
I
Right,
love it.
like
I mean, I just love it.
literally,
I mean,
you
like,
know. Well,
right?
well, look, the Alex book, in retrospect for you, you were satiated by it, and you can't get, I mean, your guy can't get enough, and right, and I like the tour on stage. That's
Sure.
one part of Van Halen, and I liked everything about it for all the reasons we talked about, the value, and just the spirit, just all of it. It was all freaking great. And then this book comes out, and some of it obviously needs dirt to sell. That's part of the whole game, right? Whatever. And he would be the disgruntled guy, and he drank, and they all partied, and like all of that. But you read it, you learned a lot, you learned enough, you wanted more. Where would you say for a
There's
guy
plenty
who
of stuff
can't,
I,
who you know
right.
more about Van Halen than anybody's that I've ever met, like that I'll ever meet.
Well, again, I want to give people an opportunity who haven't read the book. I don't want to spoil it. There's not as much dirt in the book as maybe people think. There's definitely a lot more book dirt in Sammy's book. If people want to read dirt about Van Halen, I recommend people pick up Red, which is a great read. Reportedly, that's a major reason why Alex and Sammy don't get on, which I don't think has ever been 100% confirmed by Alex, but it seems to be fairly likely that some of the stuff in that book didn't sit well with Alex in terms of how Ed was described and maybe Alex was described in the book. That said, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was covered in this book, Brothers, that I would have liked to see more depth put to. But I say that understanding that the book wasn't meant to be a history of Van Halen. It wasn't meant to be Alex's life diary. It was meant to be a tribute to his brother. And I think in terms of that purpose, if I'm going to say like, what was the purpose of the book? When I look at a book and try to assess it, what was the purpose of the book? What was it meant to do? And I think about it was meant to pay tribute to his brother and talk about the relationship with him and his relationship with his family. I think that's really where it did the best work. But there's, you know, always a million questions. But you know, the other thing too, I would say to people is that Alex did a sit down in Culver City for his book tour, sat down with his co-author and did a 45-minute basically Q&A directed by her where she was asking the questions and she you know, covered a lot of topics. And there's another opportunity to kind of get more on what Alex thinks about things. But you know, at the end of the day, and I'll wrap it with this in terms of this topic, is that if you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said there's almost no chance. I find it impossible to believe that Alex will ever write a book. But here we are, he wrote a book. So credit to him.
Yeah, okay, well, great. I mean, and I think if it is truly a tribute to his brother to sort of set the record straight, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Sometimes I say to my
100%.
wife, I'm like, hey, if I die tomorrow, don't let them say that about me. You know what I mean?
Right.
'Cause that's not
Right.
true. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
Right.
so,
Right.
like, literally, and I'm, you know, being a 40-year public figure here, you know, I
Right.
hear and see things. I'm like, man, how, you know, I had employees that got fired, like all of it. I'm like, that's not even true. And you want at some point to fire back with,
Set the
hey,
record straight.
man, you know, we were one of the greatest bands in the world. There was something that went into that in the relationship. It makes me want to read his book. Tell everybody how to read your book or books. Plural now. We have Ted Temple involved in this.
Yeah, there's
Hold them up.
available
Hold them up. Hold them up. You got them. Come on, man. You don't have. That's all right. We can go. Reno. There you go.
the Ted Temple book handy. Yeah, it's right by me here. Yeah, they're available on Amazon.com. You can order signed books from me too. You can just reach out to me through Twitter X. I have a link there. You can click on it, and I'm happy to personalize or sign books if people want books. But I'm still very appreciative that people are interested in reading my books, and here we are years later, and they're still chugging along. So it's been a great experience.
All right. I'll drop some. I'll meet you half the way. Reference here. So probably halfway between the Luxor and the Stratosphere. If they do some Vegas thing, Greg Renoff's a good man. The former professor, reformed professor.
Reform
He is.
professor.
Yeah, well, he's now just an author. Renoff. Greg Renoff. You can find him out on the interwebs, as well as his fine work on the Van Halen band. Never seems to end. So I hope they put the band back together, and I hope to gather some friends and go shake my ass some more, spend too much money, sweat a lot, and wear my sneakers and dance around and have my knees hurt the next day. I am Nestor. It's a lot of rock and roll going on here. We're celebrating International Music Day on November 22nd. You can Google it. And I'm just doing a whole lot of rock and roll. And part of the inspiration is about 10 years ago, my wife had cancer, and I went through all my old tapes and digitized them all. And I gathered everyone that was a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer then and put it on the radio, put it on the air. And then I struck up this crazy friendship with Gina Shock, and then she's in the Hall of Fame. And like, I have all of this other stuff, and I've interviewed these other people that went into the Hall of Fame. And then there'll be a bunch of fresh stuff coming your way at AM 1570, as well as that on our YouTube channel and at Baltimore Positive proper and our podcast. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive. Sometimes that's music.